It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor Podcast.
The great voice of the Great Lakes, the home of the Michigan State Spartans. News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
All aboard, it's time for the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Shane Hamlin in studio with me today as Shane's got some great ideas, some tips for gadgets for the summer. We're going to be talking with Rich Jaroslawski from Bloomberg News, trying to sort out all the changes coming from Google, and we're going to be talking with one of the people who developed the application that was 50 billionth in the iTunes Store, was downloaded this week. By the way, folks, there was a collective sigh of relief for anyone who is a Red Wing fan just before the program began, as the Red Wings came back 4-1, in case you hadn't heard about it, to even up the series. And for those of you hearing us out,
oh, ye of little faith.
Oh, I'm sorry. That first game looked painful. I thought it should have been 8-1 in favor of Chicago. Jimmy Howard was
insane. We could have saved two of those, though, for I think we're going to use those. You know, need those two goals some other time.
Yeah,
we could
have
just won
may.
2-1 and be fine with me.
On my way driving in, I think people thought I was crazy because I'm honking and waving out the window.
Well, welcome again, folks, to the Internet Advisor. And you've been hearing some of our folks who are in studio here. Myself, Foster Brown, Gary Baker. Ed Riddell, I'd eager to have you here, too.
It's great to be here and alive.
Yes, and not having to mow the lawn right now.
Yeah.
And also Shane Hamlin with us in studio.
Hello.
Shane, good to have you here. Hey, you know, there's been a lot of stuff going on this week, and coming up shortly, we're going to be talking with two people who are talking about things that are very much in the news. That is, Google this week was in the center stage as they had their big event that happened in California, and Rich Jaroslawski from Bloomberg News will be with us shortly to talk about that. And we're also going to talk with the young man who developed the application that was the 50 billionth download. That's too many zeros for me to imagine. But as that many downloads that have happened in the iTunes Store, we'll talk to him about the application itself and what's happened since.
Does that mean that Apple now has surpassed McDonald's as how many billions served?
Either that or very, very close to it. It's a fascinating story anyway. We'll talk with him in just a little bit. But Shane, you have something.
Yes.
That we're on the cusp of the summer vacation, and you've got some gadgets, you've got tech toys lined up for us for the summer. You've got five of them in particular.
Yeah, we'll get through some of these here. You know, summertime, you don't think tech normally, but us tech guys do. And there's always some great devices that come out that people really don't like. That don't, you know, some of the startup oh, what is that one website where you have an idea?
Oh, Kickstarter.
A lot of these are Kickstart.
Oh.
A lot of them are, and they get supported and funded, and there they are.
And Kickstart is a crowdfunding
site
where you ask for money because you have a great idea, and people donate it, and you go ahead and
build
develop
your prototype.
It.
Rather than going to one big investor, you go to the little guys. Anybody listening right now, and you get a certain something back for your participation.
Spend hours on that website reading some of the stuff on there. It's great stuff.
Absolutely fascinating. The cutting edge. This first one,
yes.
Since it's a summer tech toy, I am very thankful for. I wish I had had it last summer.
And I actually got to demo it when I went to Cozumel a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you?
Yes, really? I did. It's called Dry Case. Being that we are from Michigan and surrounded by water, and there's a lot of water sports here, boating.
Yeah.
And
I could just see skin, you know, doing a little scuba diving with this. And, you know, you look out, and here's a big pelagics out there, and you kind of pull it up, and you go, yep, It's a great white shark.
You know,
somehow, you know, you. I don't know.
It's a little too late then.
We have our iPhones and our Windows 8 phones and our Android phones and cameras and any kind of MP3 player, any kind of electronic device. And we like to go in the water with them, whether it be taking pictures or video or just listening to music while you snorkel is great.
That's incredible. By the way, I could have used it not because of anything intentional, but last year at this time,
I jumped
into the river when we were vacationing, not remembering that I have my iPhone in my pocket. So this is why I say it's a very important one for me.
So a dry case is basically like a high-tech Ziploc, basically.
A very high-tech Ziploc.
Yes.
And it worked really well. I tried it out in Cozumel, like I said. The great thing about it is you can get the waterproof headphones for it.
Oh, no kidding.
Plug it in, and while you're snorkeling, listen to whatever you like. Picture quality was great. You didn't notice it. It was in a bag.
Mm-hmm.
Great, you know, U.S. company. And, you know, you can do all kinds of great stuff with it.
There was one place we thought we could get away from texting and phone calls.
Yeah.
It's now gone.
You know, I was in Cozumel, and I'm, you know, 30 feet underwater, and I'm texting and tweeting.
No.
The keyboard works very well underwater with that dry lock, actually.
Oh, my word.
And you have good reception down there.
Yeah, great. The water's a big conductive pool for me.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And not everyone can afford a GoPro, right? A program, you know, the nice, expensive underwater
cameras
all the rich
guys
are getting.
You know, that is a very good point, that you could then take your iPhone or whatever, the Android phone, underwater.
Yep.
By the way, does it fit all forms of phones?
It's a little larger for most phones. I mean, it comes large, so you can fit them in there. And then it has like a little squeegee, almost like when you pump up your arm for an arm pressure cuff. It's got one of those little squeeze things that sucks all the air out. It gets it real airtight.
No matter what the size is. That is really kind of cool. So then you could take pictures underwater.
There is only one thing I did find is if you're in deep water, it for some reason has a little bit of a problem focusing.
Oh.
But once you get into, because if you're just going to shoot down straight to the bottom, you had some depth issues, I think, with the film.
Mm-hmm.
But once everything was in range, beautiful. You couldn't even tell. Absolutely beautiful.
Now, what's your next one?
My next one is called Pivot Head.
Okay.
I give up.
So that's different than rubbernecking.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's not a bobblehead.
No, it's not a bobblehead. It's actually a pair of sunglasses. They kind of look like Oakley's a little bit.
Okay.
And they give you a high-definition camera built into them, so you can get point-of-view recordings.
Well, it's just by like Google Glasses.
But not without
all
the data.
Stuff. Yes. Yeah. This is just the recording.
Correct. Yes. I mean... it's a great device, but we'll talk. I guess we're going to be cutting to break here soon.
Yeah, well, this one is called Pivot Head.
Pivot Head.
You can wear like glasses.
Yep, high definition. They're a little expensive, $299, but I'll explain more when we come to more of this stuff a little later.
We'll talk about it throughout the rest of the show. That's Shane Hamlin's top five must-have summer tech toys. Got it out one breath. Back in just a minute to talk about the Google I.O. conference. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. By the way, our show notes are a great resource for you as you're listening to one of our podcasts, or if you're listening to our program live right now, go to InternetAdvisor.net. And for instance, Shane has been talking about these five top tech items for the summer. You can click on the InternetAdvisor.net. There's a news item that is right below the show notes, and he's got all five of them there. We'll talk more about them as the program goes on. Well, when we want to get some perspective on things that are happening in the tech world, we go to a gentleman who is just a tremendous resource. You've heard him on National Public Radio and many other places. Rich Yaroslavsky is with us from Bloomberg News. And, Rich, thank you so much for joining us once again here on the Internet Advisor.
Great to be here.
Yeah, Rich, out there on the West Coast, on the left-hand side of the country, you have just had I think it's still going on, a major technical event, and that has been the Google I.O. For folks who are in the rest of the country and don't know, exactly what this kind of thing is, what is a Google I.O. conference?
Well, it's I sometimes think of it as Google Palooza. It brings together several thousand, 5,000 or 6,000 developers who are working on projects and apps and devices that use Google software and services, and it brings them all together, and it's the place that the Google executives come out to trumpet the latest and greatest Google software and Google products and Google services, to basically to get them fired up and enthusiastic about about continuing to develop for Google platforms.
Now, Rich, in the past, Google has often these meetings have been characterized by some tremendous kind of a publicity stunt. Last year, the guys parasailing in with the Google glasses and that whole kind of thing. That whole aspect of theater seemed to be gone from this year. Am I right in that?
Well, this year, I think the event this year was the main attraction was the ability to hold hundreds of journalists hostage for hours on end while a parade of Google executives came out to unveil these great announcements, some of which were, shall we say, on the incremental side.
Yeah.
And, man, I after about 3.5 hours of the keynote, I was about ready to crawl for the exits.
As they say, the mind can only absorb as much as the seat can endure.
Something like that, yes.
So was there, after enduring all that, what was the highlight, is the highlight, do you think, of the Google conference this year?
Well, in a funny kind of a way, for all the announcements that were made, and there were, reams of them, the highlight was probably Larry Page coming out on stage at the end of the keynote, Google CEO, to talk sort of about the bigger picture, about his vision for where things were going. Now, Larry has had some vocal issues, it's hard for him to speak, but he came out and he just sort of sketched a big picture, which was, I don't know how exactly you could characterize it, but don't get too caught up in the competitive aspects of company A versus company B. The prize that we should have our eyes on is remaking how people live their lives.
Speaking of remaking, is Google trying to remake itself into a different kind of a company, define itself? Because in some ways, it's kind of almost like the old Yahoo, that it's a little bit of everything.
Well, there's always been a little bit of a disconnect between how Google thinks of itself and what it actually is. How Google thinks of itself is this vast enterprise that is involved in all these different activities and trying to bring the best and the brightest minds to bear on all these issues. What Google actually is, when you look at it from a business point of view, is it's still a search and advertising company.
Yeah, that's where they make their money.
That's where they make their money. Yeah. And, to their credit, they have invested in and continue to invest in a broad range of things. But you sometimes get the sense it almost feels like spaghetti tactics. We're gonna try a whole bunch of things, and we're gonna toss them all at the wall, and see what sticks.
Yeah, and they've had some colossal failures, like the Q or was it Q? Am I right? The Google Q,
the Globe, the home entertainment Globe.
Yes. Yeah.
I had a review unit of it at one point, and I spent hours staring at it, and I still wasn't quite sure what it was supposed to be.
Well, but we have Apple and Microsoft and IBM, any large tech company, they're always going to have failures, right?
Well, that's absolutely true. And
Google would have even more because of the way they allow their employees to innovate.
And to their credit, and this is the one, and this may be their saving grace in this approach, they will kill things. Because a lot of companies, when they've invested a certain amount in a product or in a project, and they become invested in it emotionally as well as monetarily, and they won't pull the plug. Google at least has the discipline to, at some point, look at things and say, you know what, this isn't working. It isn't what we thought it was going to be. So we're going to pull the plug. They're doing that right now with their RSS a Google Reader.
That's right, Google Reader, much to a lot of people's chagrin.
They have like Rich says, they have no problem axing something like, Google Chat and all these things. It seems like they're getting rid of stuff and replacing it. It almost seems like they're really going after maybe developing a true OS almost, it seems like, in my opinion.
A true
OS operating system.
Yeah. Well, they have you know, they have two operating systems, as they made a big point of in terms of Android and Chrome, which they use on laptops.
Enormously popular and getting even more popular as we go along.
But really, in a lot of ways, I think your point is exactly right, that in a lot of ways, Google itself is becoming the OS. You know, the fundamental thing about Google is that it wants to lock you in to Google services.
Yep.
Where it can, you know, it can access data for you, and it can access data about you.
Rich Jaroslawski, by the way, is with us. He's a commentator for the Bloomberg News. You know, Rich, you said it, I think, perfectly, is that they are trying to bring you into their little environment. And the same thing goes for Apple and for Microsoft. All these companies are trying to draw us into their world so that it's very easy for us to function between the devices.
And you've already done it. You've already lumped Google into companies like Microsoft and Apple. And that's kind of like they want to be. I mean, that's who they're going to try to be.
Yeah,
the buzzword is ecosystem.
Yeah. Ecosystem. That was the word I was looking for.
You know, and you have to include Amazon in that in that universe as well, I think.
Yes.
But you know, the interesting thing about Google is that the way they've structured the company, their ecosystem cuts across a lot of platforms. For example, one of the most interesting products that they came out with last year was a product called Google Now. It's a service that provides information that you want exactly at the moment or even before you know you want it. Mm-hmm. But the problem with Google Now was that it was only available on the latest version of Android, the Jelly Bean version of Android, and that's still a minority of Android devices.
But they
What did they do last month? They brought it out for iOS
devices
as well.
I know. That's what I love. Here, I have an iPhone, and I can get Google Now on it, and a lot of other people who have Android devices can't get it. Just a quick comment, because we're near the end here. Google Music, that music service that came out. Wow. Winner or loser? What do you think?
Well, at the moment, and I've played with it a little bit, at the moment I'm having a hard time seeing where the where it's better, for example, than Spotify or some of the or Pandora, or some of the services that are out already. So, as a marker or a placeholder, you have to ask the question: well, where is this going?
Yeah,
what's their
exactly?
Ultimate
and they for? And they won $10 a month for it. One of the things you did point out, Rich, in your articles, and we got to wrap up on this, was that Google Voice is really becoming good, and now has been brought to the desktop for search as well. Rich Jaroslawski, you'll see him writing more about this in Bloomberg News. Please go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and find out more there. Thanks so much, Rich.
Thank you.
A lot of stories in technology are about numbers, and those numbers keep on getting bigger and bigger as the devices get smaller and smaller. And a huge number that came out in the news headlines this week was the downloading of the 50 billionth, there's too many zeros for me to remember, 50 billion copies of applications have been downloaded from iTunes, and the one that made it as the 50 billionth was a great application called Say the Same Thing. And right now, we're delighted to have on the air with us Andy Ross, who is one of the developers of the app and is also a member of a group called OK Go, which, Andy, I find out is one of the favorite bands of one of our guys in the studio here. Welcome.
One of them.
That's great. Good to be with you guys today.
Good to have you with us as well. And by the way, folks, you really need to go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, and take a look at the links we have there. There's some wonderful things on YouTube that you guys have put out. Shane was reminding me, Andy, that you were the guys that did the song with the treadmills.
Yeah, that was sort of our first really big viral video. Guilty, that's us.
So how did you become the 50th billion download? And if you could plan that, can you happen to give me the Powerball numbers for tonight?
it really is some sort of crazy lightning strike. I mean, I think I heard the statistic that there are 800 apps downloaded a second on the App Store. Mm-hmm. So to hit that number is pretty crazy. I mean, at least I think it's random. So, yeah, we flew to Philadelphia yesterday, and I sort of was a little nervous getting on the plane. I was like, well, I just experienced something incredibly rare. Maybe I shouldn't be flying anymore.
Good point.
I
play Powerball. That's my only advice. And normally, that's not the advice I give anybody.
Well, Andy, tell us about the application. Now, we should just say, folks, for folks who are listening here, that the application, this magic number of 50 billion, happened to go to a young man named Brandon Ashmore from Mentor, Ohio, not too far from us, and he received a $10,000 gift card to the iTunes App Store. Again, completely random that he got that. But what's kind of interesting is, Andy, that this application that you have, Say the Same Thing, is pretty new, isn't it?
Yeah, so we just released it last Thursday, a little over a week ago. And what's interesting is that prior to the release, we found out from Apple that we were going to be featured in the App Store. So for our first week of release, we were actually featured, and then the 50 billion happened right around the time when the feature was lifted. So
wow.
It was a crazy week for me being on the tech side of it and, you know, making sure that all ran smoothly.
Oh, my.
And then I got the call from someone at Apple at, like, 7:30 in the morning my time before I'd had my coffee, and I was pretty sure I was not hearing them correctly. it's pretty new.
What did they say where they called you?
I got it at a voicemail. They called me at, I was on the West Coast, and so they had called it at 4:30 my time and just said, you know, congratulations, you're the 50 billionth app downloaded, and we'd love to speak to you. And I had known they'd been counting down to 50 billion. I'd seen it a few times.
Yeah.
But my mind wasn't working fast.
You thought, I got to hear that message again. I'm sure you have somehow enshrined that message someplace.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
I've got it.
You had to think, with now, you know, with everything that goes on now with all this gaming, that had to be a prank call. Someone is behind this.
Well, I was just so run down from the week of release because we were under really heavy traffic, and I was sort of like making sure the servers were staying alive. So I was just so exhausted that it just added to this whole surreal like feeling at the end of this week.
Well, Andy, it must have been. You're not a huge organization, are you, in terms of the tech end of the side?
No, we're not. We're actually small. I mean, I sort of think of, some band members, they have side projects that are other bands.
Right.
My side project is a tech startup, so a side startup, if you will. And we're small. We're five people. And we have a few freelance people on top of that, but it's been a challenge to handle the attention, both from the feature and from the 50 billion.
Now, after the 50 billion happened, did you find a bump in the downloads at that point too? People were kind of rushing to see what this was.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it helped, you know, slow the sort of. You know, hangover from being taken off as a feature from the App Store.
Right.
Definitely we got a new set of users in, people that don't necessarily go to the App Store where they would have seen the feature.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got people that, you know, maybe see it on the news or see it on Twitter or see it shared.
Yeah. By the way, we have a wonderful video that we link to on our homepage. There's a video that explains the game that you can click on that is just a hoot to watch. Two of the band members are in it. And I love the video. Just watching was fun. Tell us, Andy, how that... We're talking about with Andy Ross, by the way, who is a member of a band called OK Go and also the developer of this app, which was the number of 50 billion downloaded from the iTunes store, called Say the Same Thing. That, apparently, Andy, came from your experience of being on the tour bus with lots of time on your hands.
Yeah, so the game that it's based on is sort of an old improv game. Improv groups will play it as like a warm-up before they start working. And the way it works is you play with one other person. Each of you says a random word at the same time. And then the goal is to find a word that's in between the two words you just said. And then you'll say another word, and hopefully you'll say the same thing. That's the goal of the game, is to just say the same thing. So this is sort of a game that I played a lot, high school friends and college friends.
Mm.
And when you're in a band, in a van, you have a lot of free time in your hands. So it can be one of those games, like a Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon, or you know, one of those car word games.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. There's no uniform necessary. There's no board that you have to buy.
Exactly.
And the fun thing about that, I would think this would be wonderful for folks who have kids in the back seat. You know, here's the game, play it. Now, the tech end of this thing, the application, how does that extend the game? Or what does that do with the game? How does it interact?
Well, so the game in person is really fun, especially when you win. You sort of, like, want to hug the person. Which, if you watch the video we made,
yes,
is a lot of
yes.
fun.
Great video, by the way. Very, very good.
That's very good.
But I sort of have a long programming background. And so, you know, when the iPhone was released and they started, you know, talking about apps and all this stuff, I sort of got interested in, well, that sounds like a fun thing to program. So, when, you know, playing this game so much, I was like, well, this might be a good candidate for this. It's a two-player game. You play with another person, but now maybe if we made an app for it, you could play them no matter where they are.
Right.
And so I made sort of like a really junky, like not pretty, designless version of it, sent it to the guys in the band, sent it to a lot of our friends, and we found out that it was really, really fun to play on the app. And kind of the reason why we thought it was so fun was that, especially when you're playing with friends, you start to say words that are like inside jokes, or you're trying to like make the clever comment that only your other friend, only this specific friend is going to understand. So in a way, it's almost like you're hanging out with them because you're sharing such personal information.
That is fun. That is really
just
fun.
Working on building your friendship even stronger with it, you know?
Exactly.
Now, do you have, you've got this little company, this, you just said you're kind of your side job because you are one of the guitarists, am I right?
With the
band called OK Go. And again, you can link and see some of the information from the band as well on from our website, internetadvisor.net. Are there other things, though, with this little side company that you now you're thinking of doing? You know, maybe this will give you the impetus to go on, the recognition?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the first thing we want to do is we want to make this game better. We want to make it more accessible to more people. I mean, right now our login options are pretty limited. You have to log in with Facebook, or if you're on iOS, it's Game Center. You can use either. And we want to... we want to open that up in the best way possible. Further from that, we have a few other game ideas for this specific game that we think are enhancements that we think will be really fun.
Andy, I really hope that you succeed at this. What I like about it so much is that it is simple, it's personal, doesn't require equipment. And it's a whole lot of fun. And congratulations again to you, Andy Ross, from the band OK Go, for developing this application. Say the same thing. It was the 50 billionth download of the App Store. I hope that you have much success from this. Thanks so much for being with us on the Internet Advisor.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you. Back in a moment with Mike Brennan and the Mike Tech News. And it's time for us to bring you Michigan Technology News with Mike Brennan. Keep an eye on technology in Michigan and the impact around the world. Mike, welcome.
Thanks, Foster.
What's in the news?
Well, I want to depart from the script briefly to say, go Red Wings. They won 4-1 this afternoon over the Blackhawks. That series is tied 1-1. So that's it for my sports commentary.
Yes, indeed. Go,
Mike,
Red Wings.
You better stick to the tech news, not sports broadcasting.
Well, you're going to slip that stuff in there, right? So, kind of blow my own horn. A month ago, I predicted when Esperion Therapeutics hired a new chief medical officer, they were positioning themselves for an IPO, and lo and behold, this week, a drum roll, please, the bad cholesterol battling Esperion filed for an IPO trying to raise up to $70 million. So Roger Newton's at it again. Well, next week at Michigan Growth Capital Symposium, I probably will run into Gary there. It's like old home week for me. I know a lot of the venture capitalists and the angel investors around the state. David Brophy's been doing this for 32 years, and he's got 36 companies pitching next week to hundreds of potential investors. Many of those companies are from Michigan. Some of them are from other places in the Great Lakes. But, I mean, it's going to be a really great opportunity for our Michigan technology companies to showcase what they got in front of the kind of people around the country that can give them money to make what they got go commercial. So, pretty exciting stuff. Then also the Michigan Film Office, I always love those folks up there because I'm a big fan of that program. They just funded three projects for digital media incentives and $288,000. You know, I know the governor and I disagree on this. He's not a big fan of incentives, but in this case, anything that brings in the more of the creative class in this state so that we can get these catalytic kind of reactions going with other entrepreneurs we have, I think is a really good thing.
Mike, what is the difference between the digital kind of incentives and the movie?
These are digital programming. You know, they could be animation. They could be things like that. But it'd be more along those lines versus a film production. So.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And you got some other stories for us.
We've got Microsoft warning that there's threats now to various Facebook accounts. Microsoft has issued a warning. There's a piece of malware masquerading as a Google Chrome extension and Foxfire add-ons that threatens to hijack Facebook accounts. And then the bad guys get in there and can use you for botnets and all sorts of things or harvest your personal information. So that's not such a good thing, but people need to be aware of that.
So. There's another push on, so make sure your security is good. All right, maybe one, I'll throw this back to you as one final story. GM is showing off a new data center.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to mention that last, that General Motors shows showing off a new $130 million data center in Warren. And what they've been doing for the last year, 2 years, they've been consolidating, bringing all that stuff back, IT back in-house, that they had used contractors on in various things, going back to the EDS days. And they also said they're going to spend another $258 million to build a second data center in Milford. Now, these are not big job creators, per se. They don't generate a lot of jobs. But it brings that technology back into Michigan and
absolutely
makes GM in control of what they're doing in IT, and I think that's really important going forward. So.
Absolutely. Mike, thank you so much for this report this week. It's Michigan Technology News, mitechnews.com. Mike Brennan is the editor, and you can find out more about all the stories are there by going to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and clicking on that homepage on the mitechnews.com site. Thanks so much, Mike, for being with us this week.
Thanks, Foster.
Take care. All right. By the way, before we wrap up this hour, we started off the program talking about Shane's,
yes,
Hamlin's top five must-have summer tech toys. We talked about a dry case to keep our phones dry underwater.
Pivot head.
My problem. Pivot head, which is a point of view. It's
point
glasses.
Of view.
Glasses.
So it records what you see.
Right.
And we were talking at the break how great it would be for those fisher who loves fishing, out there fishing, and boom. Records the whole catch.
Gary, you were also saying, because you love lacrosse and your son Justin plays it so well, it'd be nice to have that so you can simply watch the game.
That's right.
And it follows your eyes as you're doing that.
Yeah. Such a great device. And like I said, $299 for a high-definition video recorder, not that bad, plus sunglasses, right?
Absolutely.
And, all right. And
yeah, for $299.
How about, and this has been a big talk this year about the wearable watches, the devices.
Yeah, and even Google is trying to get in the game with a Google Watch that will compete directly with this one here, Pebble Watch. It's been out a year or two.
So I always thought that was like Fred and Wilma's responsibility.
To watch Pebble.
Keep her away from Bam Bam, right?
Yeah, yes. Right. But Pebble Watch, actually, it's a great price for what it does.
You know, it's $150. You're going to spend that on a quality watch anyway. And it's not ugly. It's kind of cool looking. It's hip. It's new. It's
connect to both iPhone and the Android
phone. Now, hang on, guys, because I'm in the market to buy a new phone, a new watch. I use my watches all the time.
So
I wear a wristwatch, but I'd like to move into the 21st century.
Well, then jettison it.
Jettison what?
This watch.
You're right. My
son said, Dad, if you're going to act like you're under 50, you got to get rid of the watch.
No. Right? No.
You know what? I was thinking the same thing last week. I had my watch, and I took a poll of everyone. I was in a crowd. I hardly saw a single watch.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't see many watches at
Everyone
all.
Everyone uses their phones for watches. Why would you need a watch?
But why would I want to dig into my pocket while I can sit and look at
the
wrist?
It's always in their hands anyways.
That's true. That is true.
And why have a watch? You just got to keep track of it, you know. And,
Now, I will make it a...
So my son convinced me.
So you,
Dad,
know, you know. Slave to fashion, Gary.
But I will make... I will say this, though. When it comes to... tech watches, like exercise watches, and
yes,
you're at the gym, then I see them.
That's big.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sport watches, those things.
And this Pebble watch does connect directly,
yes,
to your iPhone or, right, your Android phone.
Oh, so I...
And...
Oh, Jenny, can I please have one?
You could take and answer your watch. You know, this is as close as we've gotten so far
to Dick Tracy.
Calling Dick Tracy.
So here's the thing. Here's a good example. You're at... you're bringing in groceries.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You've got your phone in your pocket, or for the ladies, in your purse,
mm-hmm,
or it's still in the car, and it rings. It notifies you on your watch. You can see who it is. You can answer them back. Does all that kind of stuff. Answer your text back.
Can you actually talk into the phone?
It is a touch. Yes, you can touch.
But do you talk into the phone itself, or do you have to have like a Bluetooth headset?
It is Bluetooth, and it does sync. Now, as far as
the phone
voice,
does, but you need,
yes,
a headset.
Yes.
You do need a headset.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, it's got a touch screen. You can, I believe, set up replies, like automated general replies back. Mm-hmm. But
it's funny, kind of, this is a little, uh-huh, cultural kind of thing. You're saying no watches are cool. My wife goes nuts about people who have the Bluetooth pieces in their ear because they're walking down the street, apparently talking to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's going to be really interesting? They've got some new technology out that, and I've forgotten the actual name of the technology, but it fits behind the ear, not in the ear.
Oh.
And you are able to hear through that.
Sure, it's
bone.
The jawbone does that, I think.
Right,
yeah.
And this is, you know, just lays up against behind the ear, that bone, mm-hmm, behind the ear. And it keeps your conversations quiet. Right now, if you have one of those, you can still hear ambient person. Somebody, mm-hmm, standing next to you might be able to hear the person when it comes in through that bone, to vibrate that bone. Supposedly, you're not supposed to be able to hear it. Couple that with Google Glass. Boy, could that be fun.
And the Pebble Watch?
Yes. It's not very expensive, $150. I have a few more for us. We'll get to those later in the show.
So hang on. And,
great,
folks, by the way, if you want to see that full list, it is,
mm-hmm,
on the news items on our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Scroll down, and it's Shane's top five must-have summer tech toys. Okay, this is a must-have for you. It's a phone number, 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. This next hour, we will be taking your calls and answering your questions about anything that's happening in your life, technologically, that has to do with your computers. 800-859-0957. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Welcome to the hour number two of the Internet Advisor. It's your hour. That's the time that you get to call us, and we have a great crew in studio here, Gary Baker, Andrew Dell, and Shane Hamlin, and myself, Foster Brown, ready to answer your questions, tackle anyone you want to have. It's anything has to do with your computer, getting on the internet, getting around it, and as we say sometimes, getting over the problems you encounter there. 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. It's the second hour of the Internet Advisor. That's the hour in which our phone lines are open for your questions. And our mantra around here is, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. Now, don't ever feel that it's too simple, that it's too basic, because there's a lot of people who will be helped by answering your question. And we always are, it's always valuable to go back and touch base with our listeners and to help them with questions that you may, seem simple to you. You may not feel like you're much of an expert, but that's okay. We got a lot of people out here who are interested in helping you. So here's the magic number, 800-859-0957. That's again 800-859-0. If you like the letters, WJR. Guys, just before we came down to the studios, I had an email from one of our listeners asking about something apparently that's happened with Firefox. They said that Firefox suddenly updated itself. And it wasn't, it said, not my choice. In other words, this kind of happened in the background. Now it says there's no place to type the URL or the address in it. Now, I don't have Firefox. I'm not running it now. Any of you guys running Firefox at all?
No, I switched to Google Chrome.
Yeah, I did too. So I've. It's funny. That used to be the one you would get to be on the cutting edge with Firefox.
Yeah, so it's not an upgrade by itself. It didn't happen that way unless he set it to happen that way.
Yeah.
If he set it to notify me when there's an upgrade and then let him choose, it will continue to do that. What really happened was his ribbon went away.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we just need to show him how to get his ribbon back.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ed, and it operates very similar to IE, right?
Yeah. Now, Shane, what do? Do you right-mouse click in the top toolbar or the top bar?
Yeah, it looks like you're going to hit the Alt key. We'll show the menu bar, and then you'll go down to View, Toolbars, and you'll see the menu bar in there. Then make sure they're checked.
They're checked.
Yeah.
That's different than I would have suggested. I like that. Say that again then. You press the Alt key.
Hit the Alt key. That will bring up, they'll show a menu bar. Then you go to View and Toolbars. And then you can select, make sure there's a check in that menu bar to keep it there.
Excellent.
You know, so.
You know, I wonder if the F10 key works in Firefox like it does in Internet Explorer, full screen, not full screen.
Boy.
So. Well,
and it would be the navigation bar that he needs to make sure that he's checked to
correct.
Get his URL.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then obviously you want a menu bar as well. You can have other bars, but I choose to have more real estate, so I don't check the other bars.
One of the other things that was said was that his search page had gone away, or his home page. He says, it also changed my home page to Google, which apparently wasn't the one that he wanted to be using.
So that we can take and he can go to settings, tools, and then get down to internet options, and then change that back. Because up there it'll say,
Marty, your ears must have been burning. We've been talking about you.
I didn't have the radio on until just now, so I missed that.
All right, well,
you can listen to the podcast. That'd be a good thing.
To catch a part of that. But your problem was basically, apparently, Firefox suddenly updated itself, as far as you knew. And
as I know, I didn't do it, and I had my homepage for something else, and all of a sudden it was Google, and the edition of Firefox was different. I don't know what's going on. And when I want to put something in the URL so that I can type an address in, there's no URL space anymore.
So now that's more information than we had. If you know for a fact that the version is different, that's interesting, right? So if she didn't,
I don't for sure. I just know that something got changed that I didn't
right.
do.
Okay,
it almost sounds like it reset itself, you know.
But the changing of the search engine. What is the new search engine?
No, it's just her homepage.
The homepage that I had was Start Page. That's a search engine.
Okay.
It wasn't Google, and when I went back online, it was Google.
Google was the search page that showed up right away as your home page, right?
Yes.
So,
and I can't change it because there's no way to change it. There's no toolbar or anything else on there, and I can't put a URL in there for...
Yep.
The only way I can get any address on there is to use Google.
Now, a quick question. What operating system are you using, Marty?
Windows 7.
Windows 7, okay.
Yeah. So, Shane, do you want to take us through, again, how to get the toolbars back?
Basically, you're going to hit your Alt key, and that should show the menu bar while you hold it down. What you'll do is you'll open that menu bar, and you'll go down to where it says Toolbars, and then make sure the menu bar is selected. That should keep it up there, put a check mark in it. Then you can go into the toolbars and make sure the URL, the address bar is checked, and do all those things that way.
Right.
It happens sometimes. It's kind of like right-clicking on Internet Explorer, up in the top and making sure those are all selected in the menu bar and everything. For some reason, the more and more we talk, the more and more I think something is going on.
That's why I thought when I saw Marty, I saw your email initially, I thought System restore. Ed's go back magic. The magic go back button.
Which you could also
well, it's either that or she could have her antivirus software could have done something. She could be infected with a malicious piece of software that tried doing something.
But one of the things you've always told us is that when that kind of thing, something strange and odd happens like this.
Oh yeah, to go
system restore right away.
Yeah,
to go back to the date before the change happened. Now, when did the change happen?
Must have been about 3 days ago. I think after that I had done a restart.
Well, this would be a system restore. Do you know what that is?
Not exactly. I know you talked about it and how to do it.
It is in for instance, in Windows 7, you should simply be able to go down to the start button on the bottom, type in system restore, and it'll give you the beginning of that, and it'll give you all the prompts. So why don't you hang on a second, and we'll talk with you off the air and see if we can give you a little more information on that, okay?
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty. Back, by the way, for your calls at 800-859-0957. 800-859-0957. Looking for your call next. Welcome on a beautiful spring afternoon. We're all feeling kind of good because the home team won. And it's a time, however, an opportunity for you to get some answers to things that have been troubling you about using your computer. And with me in studio is Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, who's a seasoned veteran at this, as well as Shane Hamlin, who not only is a seasoned troubleshooter, you also have a business that you work out of.
And not as seasoned, though. I'm not that old.
That's why I use the word seasoned.
Yes. Yes, I do. We have a business over there in Sterling Heights, CompTech Services, right there on Shaner and 19 Mile Road. And
it's great. You know, it's been kind of interesting, just tangentially, to see the growth of smaller businesses coming back again, especially in the computer world.
Yeah, they do tend to pop up. You know, the problem is they don't last long because, let's be honest, guys, tech people are not the greatest people.
Right.
Well, not only that, but, you know, just the economy of scale, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you just – it's hard for a smaller, you know, one store – I was going to call it chain, but it's obviously not a chain.
No, nope.
It's really hard to get enough volume at the lower margins to compete with some of the big box or the internet.
I mean, we're not getting rich doing this.
Right.
This is
a labor of love, like we do here on the show, right?
You know, it's a living. Yeah. I get to help people. I can go to bed and sleep at night knowing that I help people, and that's the most important thing to me.
Right.
It really is.
Unlike most tech people, Shane is actually good with people.
He's not
some nerd in the basement that his
mom
hasn't kicked out yet, you know.
And there's a time and place to be able to take your computer, go in, look at the person right in front of you, tell them and show them what's wrong, right, and have them take over and put their fingers on the keyboard and solve the problem. And you can't do that on the phone with somebody in a foreign country.
I want to ask just maybe some of the common things that you run into, Shane, in that. But let me give the phone number out again, 1-800-859-0957. Because this is like one of those experiences where you can walk in the front door, essentially, of our show here and ask a question about your computer. We'll get a little information from you and maybe find a solution to your problem as well. And it's toll-free. It's right there for you to pick up the phone and do it. Be the brave one, 800-859-0957.
Now, Foster, during the break, we asked Marty to hang on, and we would work with her off the air. Shane got on the phone with her and had some great advice. Shane, I think we could really help a lot of people by telling them what you told Marty.
And this is not just for Marty's issue. This is kind of when you have this issue with browsers in general or any kind of software that you can reinstall. And that's kind of what I did. I said, you know, it sounds like there's something else going on. It seems a little fishy that this is disappearing and that's disappearing. Why don't we do this? Why don't we open up, you know, Google Chrome or Internet Explorer and download a fresh copy of the latest Mozilla Firefox, okay?
Mm.
And then go in and uninstall it in your add and remove programs, and then restart it, bring it up, then restart it twice so we can clear out the registry and any kind of remnants of the old program. So we'll do that twice.
So the first time, if there's a program a browser's notorious for this, it'll uninstall everything that isn't in use, but it might have extensions in other programs that could still be in use that they won't uninstall until you power down, and then you power back up again. Now you can power it down and it'll uninstall them all.
Correct. And a lot of people, that's kind of like also when you're deleting something. Like you want to delete this picture or some temp files, and you can't delete them. It errors. It says, well, cannot delete. And you're like, what the heck?
It's being used somewhere.
If
right?
you just restart your computer, right. then you can right. you can delete those. So that's what I told her. She's going to do that, and that'll take care of, unless she's got a virus, but that'll take care of her, I think, her issue with her toolbars.
Okay, here's the number again, 800-859-0957. It's like one of those lazy spring afternoons. You know? People are kind of basking. They're over the tension of whether the Wings would win the game. But the phone mm-hmm. lines are open here, folks. You got a free consult here
yes.
at 800-859-0957. Please do step in.
And always don't be afraid to ask the easy questions yes. that we know how to answer, right?
It
make us look good and feel good if we can answer a question.
Like a genius. So.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, you've been using Windows 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Gary, I think you've been looking over your son's shoulder using it.
That's right. Yeah. He's,
is it any easier in Windows 8 to solve these kind of problems? Do they have... instead of having, for instance, to go back and install a whole new system, you know, reinstall the system, is it easier in some ways? Because I know that they kind of take incremental changes that have gone on in Windows 8.
I'll kind of give you my impression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What problems?
Right?
Right. I mean, once he understands, and by the way, he picked it up a whole lot easier than I picked it up, because
yeah.
I'm still looking for the start button and all that. He said, well, why do you need a start button for a computer? I mean, that's just crazy. You don't have it on your tablet. Why would you have it on your computer? Once you get past that learning curve, he just hasn't had a problem.
No, and actually, today was the very first day I received a Windows 8 machine in the store.
Oh, really?
With an issue.
Oh, with an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's really? Amazing.
And it was virus.
My son knows how to screw up anything.
Yeah.
You know? And
it was a virus. It.
It was a virus, yeah.
It was, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because we get a lot of calls on the air here. And one of the things I think is we've had a certain drop in the volume of calls, I think, because people are experiencing less problems. The machines are doing well by themselves. But the thing that I find kind of discouraging in some ways is people will say, well, I tried that Windows 8 and I just, forget it. I went back to Windows 7. Well,
they don't go through the learning curve.
They don't go through the learning curve. And
the interface, right?
Yeah,
it's
exactly. A lot of it is struggling with that new interface. Now, I understand that this Windows Blue, and mm-hmm. the news just came out this week. Ed and I were talking about mm-hmm. it on the way in, that Windows Blue is actually going to be Windows 8.1. And it'll be a free upgrade to everyone who has Windows on their computer. So... that there's some hope, I think, that some of these things will be, like, for instance, the start button may come back. We may
we don't need that start button.
No.
Just in our own mind.
We don't, but I think a lot of people who have been used to XP.
What, you could get a sticker and put it on your screen.
But once
a placebo. A placebo. Yeah. They got an app out now, I heard, on the way in.
I'm going to Kickstarter. I'm going to get that going.
All right, we do have a caller coming up here right now with us. Jim is with us from Milford. Jim, hi, how are you doing? Oop, let me get this up. Jim?
There he is.
Yeah.
Hi, welcome to the program. How can we help you here?
Question. You know how you get a lot of, like, you get pop-up things that say warning or you need to update Adobe or things? How do you know what's a legitimate thing to click on?
Boy, that's a good question.
A hazard. You know, everybody says don't click on it if you don't know what it is. Well, half the things, I don't know what they are.
So
good
I had,
boy, is that good.
I had, that's the last true. Time I had an update asking me to upgrade to the latest version of Adobe was this morning. And I never click on it because I don't know where it's going to take me. What I do is I go to Adobe and I say, all right, I want the latest version. And if I have the latest version, it'll say, you have the latest version. And right. if I don't,
that's a good idea.
It'll come back and start to download.
Yeah,
but I take and
so what
and
you're saying, Gary, is if what Jim is seeing is about a specific piece of software, then it's better to go back to that piece of software.
Right.
And check and make sure that you have the latest version where you're in it.
Yep.
In other words, don't respond to those messages. Ed, your thoughts?
Two biggest open doors on a computer right now, Adobe Flash
right.
and Java.
So what
they've done is they have updates that go into the toolbar that are always constantly checking for updates.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, but if you're not technically savvy enough to recognize those pop-ups from your taskbar, Gary's point is perfectly legitimate. Adobe.com and what's the other one? Sun .com for the Java.
For Java. Right. And those are the ones being attacked
like
the most.
AVG also. You know, I'll get yes. the pop-up says yes. your virus mm-hmm. or whatever is out of date or whatever. And the same
well,
type of thing. Do you, you know.
I go to the, I use
yeah,
the
you can
same
go, exactly.
mechanism.
Same
and
thing.
Even
go to the
if
site.
It, yeah, yep. yeah.
Even if it looks exactly like I would expect it to look.
That's a good point.
What you don't know is where it's going to take you. You don't know where a link's going to take you.
Yeah.
If I'm going someplace and I see a link, I trust it a little more than if somebody pops up and says, oh, right. take me, mm-hmm. click on me.
And that's a very good point because, Jim, very often what looks legitimate can be a phishing scam. So the idea is to go back to the piece of software and do your updates from there. Yep. Jim, thanks so much for your call. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend. And the number here, 800-859-0957. Join us with your call. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. We're getting some folks who are calling in here. That's great. 800-859-0957. Just quickly, for those of you who are listening to this live broadcast right now, fun kind of thing going on in this area. If you love science fiction, and I am stone hooked on, Eddie helped me get there, on Doctor Who.
Yes.
And Torchwood, and a whole bunch of Warehouse 13.
Then you
kind
should
of
be there.
Yeah. Tell them about
Motor,
the event.
Motor City Comic Con is going on right now. Over at Novi Convention Center. It's not a horribly expensive event. It's an all-day event. I think the tickets are 20, 25 or 22 bucks.
There's lots to see
all
over
day.
There.
Tons of celebrities. I mean, all the guys from Sci-Fi Channel, Star Trek, Lou Ferrigno, Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees, Chekhov from Star Trek.
Oh, I love it.
Marty, Pirate Marty from all the pirate movies, you know, with Johnny Depp.
Lots of fun being had right now. If you're listening to the live program, it's being had in Novi at the convention center there. Let's go by our phone lines right now. Ken from Brighton, Michigan, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
That's Britain.
Britain, pardon me. I'm sorry. not too far away. How you doing, Ken?
Hello there.
Hi.
Every time I put Java on my computer to run some of these calculators that I use for differentials and stuff, mm-hmm. my computer won't shut off at night. It stays on. If I take Java back out, it'll go back to sleep and shut off.
Hmm. Yeah, that's because what's going on is the Java updater is running in the background.
Oh.
So that's probably stopping his shutdown.
If you went to
can
look,
you schedule that to at a different time?
Well, I mean, you have
you
to go into the startup
yeah.
and tell it to not run.
To shut off, yeah. You don't yeah. need it.
MSConfig. Would you?
MSConfig would work.
So, Ken, if you went into MSConfig, you know how to get there?
Not really.
Okay. Down, what system are you running, operating system?
Windows XP.
Windows XP. Let's see. Help me, Eddie, on this.
Well, you go start, run, and then type in MSConfig.
Yeah, under run, yeah. MSConfig.
Or if that doesn't work, you could type it in the search bar. If it's did you say Vista?
No, he's on the
XP. So start, run.
Start, run, and then type in MSConfig. When it comes up, you'll see a bunch of tabs. Go over to the right-hand side, and what you want to do is a selective startup, okay, where you can choose what starts up. And go down the list there and just uncheck the ones that you don't need to have running right off the bat.
And one of them would be the JV update.
Yeah, Java update, yeah. Java update, one of them.
And it may actually say JV update or JV by Java Corporation. Remove the checkbox.
And that'll stop it then from starting up right away and kind of jumping in and continually.
Yeah.
So now, when it doesn't, when it's not actually updating, it'll still hibernate. It'll still go to sleep. It'll just then wake back up again. Is that what's going on?
And it prevents it from even going into hibernation.
It won't go into hibernation.
It just won't go into hibernation at all.
Yeah.
All
right.
I would wonder also if there isn't in your program, you know, control panel programs, install, uninstall, would you think that there's a Java installer in there? Updater, pardon me, in there?
It could. You know what? It could be. We say Java, but, you know, it could be anything. I mean, it really could. It could be something just hanging it up, trying to.
Oh,
I got you. Because the system, what will happen is when it's going into hibernation or shutdown, it goes through and shuts those down and then shuts off.
So now with my Java update, I don't ever let it do that automatically.
Right.
I say, just let me know. And then when it's convenient for me, then I will go ahead and update. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to update my Java program reasonably soon as it comes out. because they're usually plugging security holes, right? Same with Adobe. They're usually plugging security holes. So I don't want to linger those to linger, but I want to be able to do it on my schedule.
And we're only really speculating on that this is what is probably causing the issue.
You know, but you and your conclusion, Ken, is that it is this Java updater, because every time you put it on, it hangs up at night. When you pull it off, it stops hanging up, right?
Right.
So by process of elimination, you may have done that. So take the steps we've talked about, both in the startup menu and then look in the control panel and see if there is a Java updater in there. And you might just get rid of that, uninstall that, and then see what happens. All right?
In the MS config, not the control panel.
In the MS config.
I'd like to just take a poll. How many people turn off their computer at night?
I don't. Mine's on all the time.
Do you, Sean? Ed, do you? These guys are shaking their
head. Is that a bad thing,
These guys are shaking their head, so I'll interpret for you. They meant no.
Yeah, no, I don't. I go to standby mode.
I'm shaking my head. No, I don't.
No. So
radio.
I don't ever turn. The last time I just checked not too long ago, and I hadn't turned off my computer in over a month.
Well, he's not trying to turn it off. He's
I understand. I understand what he was doing. I was just, again, asking the question. Because I think it's an opportunity to tell other people you don't have to turn your computer off.
Theoretically, if you have a clean environment and a cool environment, it'll run forever.
Right.
Ever.
All of our servers do that, right? In data centers.
And there's not a huge saving of electricity turning it on and off, by the way, Ken. That's part
as long as it does hibernate. Now, Ken's problem was it didn't hibernate, so of course you got to fix that, but...
Okay, Ken, thanks so much for your call. I hope some of those things will help you. Let us know, by the way, through email and get hold of us at the Internet Advisor through internetadvisor.net and then the Contact Us page. Let's go to Zero Cool, I think, from Mansfield, Ohio.
Hi there, Foster. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
We're so grateful for your program in Detroit.
Thank you.
I just want to know, I got first up a question and a comment.
Yeah.
The question is, why are you guys still using Sun and Adobe products? I mean, come on. Even the hackers know that's the best way through your back door.
Yeah,
that's true.
What alternatives are there then? What alternatives would you have for that?
Well, there are better PDF readers certainly available, but as far as Java and JavaScript, I'd flush the whole thing unless you absolutely run into an internet site that requires a form that requires filled out using JavaScript. But I mean, you're skating on such thin ice because it is such an exploited piece of Swiss cheese. You're not a savvy PC user if you even have it on your computer now.
I understand.
And no insult intended.
Right.
Yep.
There's a lot of corporations that have to have it because
especially the corporation. At the corporation level, absolutely, it's a danger.
Right. It's a danger, but they have to have
Java because something.
Well, they don't have to. They haven't updated their infrastructure to replace it with something else.
But there's a better way to do it if you're a corporation, and what you do is you have your JavaScript set up on a special separate node, not attached to the rest of your computers, and only on the internet for that reason alone.
You limit damage if anything happens, and he's correct. That's a great way to do it.
Exactly. You don't want. I've seen the exploits on Java, and it's really amazing. You can have in your browser. I'm going to tell you guys something you might not know. This in your browser, you can have Java and JavaScript installed on your computer, and you can have Java and JavaScript turned off in your browser, and it can still be exploited.
Let me ask a question. There are so many sites that use Java.
I know.
So what do you do if you don't have Java installed?
You have to do, as I indicated, you have to make a separate terminal node. You have to isolate the machine because you just have to expect you're going to get hit. You got to expect you're going to get hit, and you just isolate the machine.
So you're talking about the customers, like us as individuals, have to do that,
or corporations, individuals, businesses. You have a computer in your house only for using Java. If you have to do that,
My
preference is don't use Java at all. And simply restrict yourself to not using sites that require Java because you're setting yourself up.
But so many sites today do.
I know.
So many sites.
The battle I hear here, or the tug of war is, and I think that you're right in that in terms of the absolute nature of the problems, and isolating a unit would be good. For most of the people who are listening to this, they're thinking, what does isolate a computer mean? Yeah, how do I do that? And practically...
Well, you guys can explain it, but there's a second now. Here comes my comment.
Okay,
my comment. Let me get to that, and you guys can hammer away what I just said here when I get off
okay.
with you.
All right.
My comment is, and I wanted you guys to know this, if you're not aware of this, that the IRS internet sites in both Akron, Ohio, and Atlanta, Georgia, were completely hacked. Ooh. Credit card numbers from both sites, as well as Social Security numbers, were posted on other internet sites, and it was a Turkish hacker firm that supposedly got through a firewall. Now, to me personally, I don't think there's a way to get through a firewall. You almost have to have somebody either turn the firewall off or mm-hmm. have run malware internally before right. that calls out to the internet. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to clue you into that so you can Google that, check that out, because if I was a person in Detroit and I was paying taxes, I would want to know that the city of Detroit has my data, my Social Security, and my credit cards not on the internet and protected the right way.
Mm.
First of all, you know, the information's not on the internet. It's on a computer that's connected to the internet, and most of them, the vast, vast majority of them are.
All right, Ken, thank you so much for your comments. That is something we're going to have to work at corroborating. But thank you very much for being there with us, Ken. And back again to take some more of our calls and finish out the list of the five great gadgets for the summer that Shane has. That's all coming up on the Internet Advisor.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Now, here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Oh, wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My thanks, by the way, to Rich Luzinski and Annie Nichols, who are behind the glass, helping to make the program happen. Thank you so much.
And I'll also say thank you to Zero Cool, who just called in the last segment. Boy, he should have been here during the break when we were debating all of this while you were listening to commercials. You know, first of all, thank you for continuing to listen to us. Second of all, while he's right about the problem, I'm not so sure that you can just say, oh, not going to use Java. I when I think of all of the sites that I use on a fairly regular basis, most of them have Java in them. So can you really just say, I'm just not going to go there? Can I say, I'm going to use another box? I'd be using the other box all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? So, and then that's susceptible, just like the first, you know, PC would be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we really have a great answer other than every time you can update Java, do it as soon as you can. Mm-hmm. I do not, like I mentioned, I don't do it, let it do it automatically. I want to proactively do it, but I proactively do it just about any chance I get. We got to solve the problem, but I'm not sure that abstention is the right way to do it.
Keep your protection up. Your you know, have good software, you know, and the malware prevention, et cetera, in there, and then know that you're going to get hammered. We're all going to get hammered.
Here's the thing. And Zero Cool, if you have an opinion or if you have a way that's practical for our listeners, get a hold of us. We'd love to have you on to help us understand this and help our listeners understand it.
I mean, we can do anything we want. We can keep our security. We can remove Java, remove Adobe products. But it's going to do us no good if banks are losing our information
right.
for
and
us.
And they do. Know, we know that every daily. we know that every card, and it's not just banks, but we know that almost every card that's been issued has been involved in some sort of breach situation. Mm-hmm. And they can't replace the card every single time, so they put a fraud alert on it, and they'll monitor it and see if anybody's using it. Because when 50 million credit card numbers are being, you know, breached and being hacked and being taken offshore, how many of those are actually going to be used? Not 50 million, not half of that, not even a 10% of that, right? They just can't use that many.
In the same breath.
So they don't want to replace every single card.
But rather than having people go shaking their heads and heading for the cave to put all their gold coins in, I want to just suggest, watch your credit card statements.
Absolutely.
Please watch them. For instance, I went out of the country for 10 days to Canada. I let the card and the company know I was leaving. And when I came back, keep your eye on your accounts. And there's no magic wizard of Oz behind the curtain that's taking care of this for us. Do the best you can to keep on top of those things. Let's get to somebody who's been a little different kind of question. And that is Claire is with us from Flint. And you're having some trouble retrieving your Gmail password, Claire?
Yes. I use Gmail on my phone. I don't use it on my home computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lost my phone for about a month and a half or two, and I was able to get all my phone numbers and all that stuff, but it asked me on there to re-enter my password, and mm-hmm. I don't remember my password. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, I interrupted
you. Go ahead.
No, and I went to the home computer and tried to go to the website, and they ask you, what day did you start using Google? And it's been at least 4 or 5 years, and I don't remember what my password was.
Okay. This is, by the way, not an uncommon problem. Yeah. I really appreciate your calling, because it can happen for some of the older folks in the building that I live in have had this same kind of problem.
It can happen to me.
What do we do, guys, when they come back to an account that they forgot the password, they've forgotten everything else about it? Should just open up a new account? Would that be a way of doing it?
No. Don't have to.
You're going to have to go to Google and start the recovery process. I mean, that's the only thing you can do unless you can. You're not going to be able.
And what is that recovery process normally?
I believe there's a recovery tool there, and it'll ask you a question. Do you remember your username?
Right.
Do you remember
But the problem is it asks you for your password on that recovery page.
No,
and that's my problem. I don't
one
remember
or other.
Go ahead, I'm
the
sorry.
Other questions that they ask you, I have no idea. They ask you what day did you start using the Google Gmail, and I don't remember what day.
Well,
here's
what's happened to you is you probably have had a Google account long enough or a Gmail account where they did not have security questions.
Right.
So what they're doing is they're going back with the only information they have. So what this does is tell us anyone else that has a Gmail account should log into their account and review their security settings within their Gmail account and then answer all the questions. Unfortunately for yourself, you are going to have to somehow contact the Google support. And Foster, unless you could think of something.
I was going to ask this question, guys, because I ran into this with somebody that I was helping. Practically speaking, and I'm going to ask you this, Claire, are there some important emails in that account? If you haven't used it for that length of time, what's there that's important for you to keep?
Well, there was a few documents people had sent me in there. I'd like to retrieve those. But the other thing is I'd like to continue to use to have it available to me.
I have a sneaking suspicion, and right or wrong, guys, I know less, that what you may need to do, since it's been so long, is to simply set up a new Gmail account and then make sure that you've got all the security questions involved. I don't know that you'll be able to get the information that you had in that old account. I really don't know, because there are the other security questions, like, for instance, security things, they'll ask you, for instance, you know, what was your pet's name or whatever. You've got security questions to answer, but you don't have those because you didn't set it up that way.
But what we're suggesting is she can contact Google, and she can get they'll send an email account to either her phone or to to an alternate email address. She can go in, use that password as a temporary password. It'll tell her to change the password. It's a lot more hassle than if you proactively go in and give them, a lot of people I've talked to said, well, I will never give them my telephone number. Why would I give them my cell number? Well, the reason for it is because they will then text you the code that will allow you then to get in. And they'll text it to your phone number. So you want to make it easy for you to be able to get a password reset.
But again, that's in the future.
In the future. Now she has to contact Google.
Well, contacting Google, I have found to be very difficult to contact the companies, you know, once you've had this situation sitting this long. Claire, let us give a little thought on this, okay? And see if we can come back to you, because I know it's not an unusual problem that people lose their account for a while. Like this, in this case, it's 4 years, I think you said?
No, I've had it for about two months.
I beg your pardon.
But it was so long ago when I set it up, I don't remember the password.
She's had it forever. She doesn't want to change her account.
Okay.
So the point is you're going to have to get a hold of Google.
Okay.
If you don't know how to answer the security questions that they're providing for you, then you got to get – there's no other way to do it.
Okay.
But get a hold of them. It'll be a little bit of hassle this time, but then you can set up your security questions.
Email them or
– Do you have another email account?
Yes, I do.
You could email them, but the other thing you could do is just call their tech support.
Okay.
Okay, you'll be on hold for a long time.
You will be on
hold. But it's only the one time, and then from now on.
And then please let us know. This is not an unusual experience, and it's a terribly frustrating one, especially trying to find somebody to contact. Shane, I know we're almost running out of time. I want you to, if you could, kind of quickly run through the last two of your five must-have tech toys, and then we can refer people back to our homepage, internetadvisor.net.
Yeah, on the news section.
On the news section, you got them all there. So kind of quickly.
The one that I really like is, I'm going to save it for last, but this next one is called the Rugged Ruckus. It's an actual wireless Bluetooth speaker system that will connect up to your iPhone or your Android phone and play music outside that's solar-powered. Which is nice. So it sits there, collects up, you know, it just runs. You don't have to plug it in.
Mm-hmm.
You can splash all you like by the pool.
And, really?
Yeah, and it's the sound is really
like
nice.
Like a beer cooler, too? Like it'll keep your beer cold?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Solar-powered beer cooler.
Yes.
Yeah, I got
you.
Okay.
With sound,
That's for $99, bucks, right?
Yeah, $99, and it's really nice-sounding speakers, too.
Okay.
Nice. And the weirdest one is actually called BioLite Camp Stove, and say you're out camping and you have some twigs, you burn a fire, the heat and energy generated from fire will create enough electricity to charge your iPad, your iPhone, your Android, and cook and boil water within, they say, within 30 seconds.
Does it do my homework, too?
It might. It might.
And my taxes after that. Okay.
BioLite cool Camp Stove. I like that.
But they're all listed.
They're all listed, and also there are links under each one of these ones that you can go back and find some more. Shane, thanks so much for coming up with that list.
You're most welcome.
InternetAdvisor.net, go in there and go down to the news items. Sunday in the evening, I will have the podcast of our program today. Thank you so much for joining us for this program, and don't forget to you go to InternetAdvisor.net at any time. Contact us through our site there if you have a question throughout the week, and we'll look forward to seeing you this next week. When the Internet Advisor visits you again from 4 to 6 here on your favorite station. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.